I tend to think of the gosling as a poem. Critical opening phrase of this poem will always be the grip, which the hands unite to form a single unit. Slowly and slowly, the club head is led back, pulled into position not by the hands, but by the body, which turns away from the target, shifting weight to the right side without shifting balance. Tempo is everything, perfection unattainable. As the body coils now to the top of the swing, there's a slight hesitation, a nod to the gods. Now the weight begins shifting back to the left, pulled by the powers inside the earth. It's alive, this swing, a living sculpture, and down through contact, always down, striking the ball crisply, with character. There's only one other acceptable theory about how to hit a golf ball.
Oh, boy. Well, what's the other theory?
Grip it and rip it.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Now, here's Hardy.
Welcome into the Sports Hub Golf Club. Hope your Saturday morning is off to a good start. My name is Hardy. And get to the bankroll boys who are going to make us wait on the DraftKings Over-Under show for their pick for the resumption of the PGA Tour on Thursday. They'll be in Fort Worth, but neither one of those guys giving out their picks for the tournament. Look, you're talking about things restarting. You're talking about the field for that tournament. We're going to be talking about all of it here this morning. I have no idea. No clue as to who's going to do what and how their game is going to be. How would you know unless you're out there watching these guys in their practice rounds? You're watching how they're going to, you know, warm up on the tee that day. How late can you put in your pick? I don't know, but those guys seem to have opinions that they will share with us on Monday morning. I want to start off first of all, let's just lay out what we're going to do here on the Sports Hub Golf Club this morning. As a lot of us work our way back into playing shape, there is one particular toy, okay, that I really like this thing, and it is one of the few things that I've used over the years in terms of a training aid. And I don't even know if I use it correctly. I don't even know if it's doing me any good. I think it is. I'm pretty sure it is. But it is the one, let's call it, practice tool that I have used consistently over the years, and it is not only good for warming up, it's good for keeping your game in shape, it's good for getting your swing back into shape, and we're going to revisit the conversation I had with one of the founders of this particular device coming up here in a few minutes. All right, so that'll be something to get to around 8:30. Also this morning, I want to take just a few minutes, because by next week we're going to be back into like talking about golf and the PGA Tour and how guys are playing and what it's looking like. I want to take a couple of segments here this morning. You are going to have the opportunity to call in and defend your favorite golf movie. Now, I'm not looking for a list necessarily. But if you have a couple few that you want to defend, that's fine. But you're going to have to pick one best golf movie. I know what you're automatically going to default to in a couple of cases, but really think about it. Is it the best representation of golf? Is it the one thing that really speaks to you in terms of being the best golf movie? All right? Just don't say Caddyshack automatically. That's think about it for a minute. So be thinking about that for a little while this morning. Get ready to call in when we take care of that later on this hour. The first thing I want to touch on right away this morning is something that happened on the show last week. And, Tucker, maybe you can refresh my memory on this. Did we or did we not take a call here on the show last week where somebody asked me that they asked me to intervene in a situation regarding some local golf courses. Do you remember this, Tucker?
Maybe.
You're only the producer of the show.
I'm just trying.
Why would you listen? You know, why would you listen to the show that you're?
I'm
producing?
Sorry. I meant yes, I do remember, Hardy.
Okay, thank you. Just lie to me. You know, Everyone else does. That's not going to hurt my feelings. Somebody called in last week and wanted to know why Leo J. Martin Memorial Golf Course, which is officially in Weston, And I believe if my conversations with Joe Leary years ago, I'm remembering correctly, Leo J. Martin is actually like in three different municipalities. Like the golf course is officially in Weston, but it's also in Newton. It might be, I might like border some other town. I don't know. I don't spend a lot of time in that area, especially Weston. It's not really my town. Canton is my town, all right? Many years in Roslindale and playing golf in Hyde Park at George Wright, and then moved to Canton. So when you're talking about, you know, where am I more comfortable? Yeah, Canton. But the two golf courses that had remained closed, Leo J. Martin in Weston and Ponkapog in Canton. And somebody called in last week and said, Hardy, can you get to the bottom of this? Can you use your considerable influence and power, lowercase p, but still power, to get these golf courses open, right? That gentleman called in last Saturday. And you know what I did immediately when the show ended that day? I forgot all about it. I didn't give it another thought until this popped up in my email box. Was it on my doorstep? I don't know. It's a couple days ago from the Canton Journal. Lo and behold, Ponkapog Golf Course in Canton to reopen. There it is. And then in the Boston Globe, Matt Berg wrote this. It was updated just 2 days ago. Canton and Weston became the latest towns to allow golfers back on the green under a new set of restrictions to prevent the spread of coronavirus, according to the DCR. They made the announcement on Wednesday afternoon. Now, it was my belief, based on what I had been told, and it seems ridiculous, but I was told that both of these golf courses were having issues with payment. Like, how are we supposed to get golfers back on the golf course if they can't come into the pro shop and pay for their rounds and, you know, not really set up online? I said, well, it seems like every other course has figured it out. But a lot of these courses had all those systems in place. And someone told me that that was one of the major hurdles for both Ponky and Leo J to reopen. Well, lo and behold, as we have come to learn here in the last couple of days, new pay and display machines have been installed at these golf courses that allow the users to make payments outside of the clubhouse. There it is. Reading again from Matt Berg's article in the Globe, and thanks again to the Canton Journal for being first on this and alerting me to it. Both these courses are opened now to in-state residents only. This is according to a statement from the Department of Conservation and Recreation. Each visitor's residency will be determined by their vehicle's license plate. So I know, you know, people want to play Ponky from all over the world. And so don't think that you can drive, say, you know, down to Rhode Island and pick up your friends who have driven up from all over the place, you know, Florida, the Carolinas, Texas, pick them up in Rhode Island in your car and then drive over. That they may be watching for you people. So it's only to in-state residents. And then there are additional measures like the new pay and display machines. Tee times have to be made in advance and by phone only. So with season ticket holders, and these are the guys who have their quote-unquote memberships, they'll be able to reserve 3 days in advance, and the general public will be allowed to reserve 2 days in advance. So if you are one of these season ticket holders to Ponkapog or Leo J. Martin, you get a one-day jump on everyone else trying to make tee times. But it's only three days in advance and then 2 days for the general public. And in something that has been an issue at a lot of these golf courses in terms of how many people they can get out on the golf course with the 15-minute tee times, get ready for this. The tee times at Leo J. Martin and Ponkapog, 18-minute intervals. Oof. Not a lot of golfers getting out on the course at Ponky and Leo J. All right, so there's signs up at these two courses, too. New rules. Players required to book starting times in advance. We already talked about that. Walk-on play is prohibited. Yep, that's standard. Players have to stay in their cars until 18 minutes before their scheduled tee time. You got to bring your own clubs. Obviously, you can't share clubs. That's standard anyway. Players must wear face covering and social distance throughout play. I'm reading you the rules. Players must wear a face covering and social distance throughout play. That means out on the golf course. Flag sticks must remain in the holes. Hole liners will be raised to avoid picking up the ball out of the hole. Players are asked to play ready golf and be aware of their pace. And then post-round, players must leave the facilities when they're done golfing. Clubhouses and concessions will remain closed. Gathering in the parking area is prohibited. So all this answering the question, when will Ponkapog and Leo J open? There you go. Open. Lots of rules in place. I guess the biggest ones are the 18-minute tee times, 3 days in advance for season ticket holders, 2 days in advance for the general public. And they want you to wear your mask even out on the golf course. So there's your update there on those two golf courses. We have a lot of news this morning about the resumption of the PGA Tour, guys who are playing, guys who are not going to play. And also, with all the protests and everything going on this week, statements from both the PGA of America and the USGA. All of that coming up next here on the Sports Hub Golf Club.
This is the show that helps you put it in the hole. The Sports Hub Golf Club with Hardy on 98.5 Sports Hub.
Welcome back to the Sports Hub Golf Club. It's Hardy. Already getting some tweets in here for your favorite golf movie. We'll take calls on this a little bit later. And again, I'm asking you to think about this. You know, Brian Frechette. You didn't even think about this, Brian. You said the great game ever played. You didn't even type it out right, Brian. It's the greatest game ever played. That's the Shia LaBeouf vehicle. Did he go cuckoo, Shia LaBeouf? Isn't he the one that kind of like went off the deep end a little bit? I don't know if it was post the Indiana Jones sequel movie or not, but let's just say infamously difficult to work with. But that is the retelling of the Francis We Met 1913 U.S. Open victory at the Country Club in Brookline. It's a great story. It's a great book. Is it the greatest golf movie? Plus, in the movie, they took some liberties with how the match actually went down. I don't know about that one, Brian. Thanks for responding, though. Mark said, Happy Gilmore, hands down. Best golf movie? That's the best golf movie. And the one that also features the romantic interludes with Adam Sandler, in both a comedic and romantic lead. Mark's going with Happy Gilmore. All right. The long and short of it is, I don't know that there is a great golf movie out there. I really don't know. But we'll continue taking your thoughts on it via Twitter and then phone calls a little bit later. But first, you know what? What the hell? If you want to call in about it right now, you can. 617-779-0985. What, am I going to stop you? Tell you no? I'm not going to do that. All right. So PGA Tour getting set to restart. Charles Schwab, it's going to be happening on Thursday, Fort Worth, Texas. And the first thing we need to know is that as the tour restarts here in five more days, the fields for these tournaments are going to be outstanding. You are going to see as many top players at these tournaments, the Charles Schwab. Like, who? No offense to the Charles Schwab, but is it appointment viewing for you? When it comes around again on the calendar each year, I don't even know how long it's been played there at Colonial. Colonial's obviously a storied golf course, but the Charles Schwab Challenge, is this a big one on your golf viewing calendar? No. But if you are looking to see the top talent in the world, this is going to be that type of field. 15 of the top 20 in the official world golf rankings are going to play. Number one in the world, Rory McIlroy. Everyone in the top five is going to be there. Phil Mickelson, Ricky Fowler, Jordan Spieth, Matthew Wolff, who we saw play a couple weekends ago and got a lot of new fans. If you watch that TaylorMade driving relief event that happened the weekend before the big Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, Brady, and Manning one. He's a fun player to watch. All these guys are going to be out there trying to get a jump start and re-jump their season before they start playing the majors. Because, as we know, all but the British have been rescheduled, and these guys still have a chance to win major championships this year. The PGA, the U.S. Open, the Masters. Not going to be until November, but they're going to have a chance to play, and they want to get their games in shape. Rory McIlroy said, "I can't speak for everyone, but for me personally, I just want to get back out and play. Miss the competition, miss the buzz, miss the locker room, miss the people." He misses all of it. So he's going to play in three of the first four tournaments back. Rory McIlroy is playing in these essentially mid-season tournaments where you wouldn't necessarily, you know, see these guys. You know, they take chunks off while they are playing either in, they'll play international events sometimes during this time. They'll play where they are, you know, paid to show up and go play somewhere. They will play a week or two at the big tournaments that are have to do with their personal sponsorships and relationships, and then they will get themselves into shape before the majors and skip a lot of these. They're not skipping them this year, so the fields at these tournaments are going to be pretty impressive if you plan on watching next weekend. Or if you don't plan on watching, you might want to change your mind on that. All right, a couple of calls about the greatest golf movie ever made. We'll go to Phil in Shrewsbury. Phil, you're on the Sports Hub Golf Club. What do you think it is?
Good morning. I just can't believe this hasn't come up yet. But maybe I'm just old, but what about Caddyshack?
All right. Caddyshack is obviously the leader in the clubhouse, Spotus, right? Leader in the clubhouse before we even start the conversation. But as a golf movie, how well does it accurately portray the game of golf? When we talk about best, you know, football movies, best basketball movies, they generally have a pretty good portrayal of the sport, right? Is this the best golf movie, Caddyshack? It might be the best just movie, but in terms of portraying golf, how does it do? It's okay. You know, I'm always a bit thrown off in the caddy tournament. The guy that Danny beats, D'Annunzio, is that his name? The two gloves. I've only seen one other person wearing two gloves in my life. That was at, I think it was at McGolf in Dedham. I saw a guy in the out there banging balls on the range with two gloves. I just don't know how accurate it is. I think Caddyshack holds up, right? More so than Slapshot. Heresy in these parts, I know. But I can sit down and watch Caddyshack again today more so than I can sit down and watch Slapshot. All right? I just think it's just a little funnier movie. I think there are less downtimes in the movie. There are fewer scenes in Caddyshack that make you roll your eyes and go, Jesus, this thing certainly looks, you know, close to 40 years old now, doesn't it? There are fewer moments like that in Caddyshack than there are in Slapshot. But in terms of the best golf movie, Ryan in Haverhill has one that I think deserves real consideration. Ryan, what do you say it is?
Hey, guys. First time, long time. I put my vote out there for Tin Cup. It embodies golf to me in the way that you can absolutely just lose your game altogether when he's squirting it down the range in front of a bunch of pros.
Yes.
And at the end of the movie, he just keeps punching the ball into the water, and it's just that one great shot that keeps you coming back.
Right. Now,
round. For me, that's...
Now, let's talk about some of the issues, and thank you for the call, Ryan. Let's talk about some of the issues in Tin Cup. First and foremost, we have to talk about with the opening sequence with Peter Jacobson's blues song, Double Bogey Blues. Now, Jacobson seems like a nice enough guy and a talented player, and you know, we all like Peter Jacobson. it is unfortunate that they chose to and allowed Peter Jacobson to. It sounds like a song he probably wrote and recorded for the opening titles for Tin Cup. It sets a bad tone. There are other issues with the movie. I always cringe at the bar scene when they're going to hit the seven iron that they pull out of the, you know, the old timey club display thing, and they're going to hit it through the door, and they're going to try and knock the pelican off its perch for a couple reasons. Number one, Gary McCord grabbing the beverage gun and using it like a microphone. It's cheesy. Okay. Not a fan of that. I'm also not a fan of, and again, this is, you know, probably as much due to the era of the way the shot looks when Kevin Costner hits the ball. And it looks like it's going to duck hook and dive 20 feet after he hits it. But instead, it sails all the way out to that thing in the water, and it hits the thing, and the bird flies away. It's just kind of, I don't know. It's not really. I'm nitpicking. I understand being very, very nitpicky with this. But there are other moments in Tin Cup that I really, really like. And I got to tell you, for a guy who didn't play golf, Kevin Costner, he put himself out there and swung the club well enough to where, okay, he didn't look like a tour player, but it's pretty damn good. And it's much better than a lot of actors you see swinging a golf club in movies. You want to know the worst one? I will wait. I will wait because I see one call on the line already. Somebody wants to bring out that movie. There are a couple out there that are absolutely pathetic in the way the guy swings the club. We're supposed to believe he's a great player. Matt and Peabody, you think it's Tin Cup also?
Yeah, Artie. I think Tin Cup, it's one of the best. I actually watched it last weekend. Some of those scenes and just the relationship between Costner and... it's so funny. How can you not, as a golfer, as a guy that goes out and, you know, bangs it around a little bit? It's one of the funniest movies, and I think it's very relatable in terms of, you know, it's just a nobody story, and it kind of just comes out of nowhere. It's pretty funny, in my opinion.
I like it too. And again, it's not without its cringe worthy moments. You know, when Craig Stadler is forced to deliver a couple of lines to is it Renee Russo, and she is the love interest there in Tin Cup. Yeah, a couple other guys could use her help too. I see what you did with Cup there. Like, yeah, I don't know. Maybe Stadler's the only one who did it. You get to see a very young Phil Mickelson out there. That's kind of fun. But in terms of the way the actual golf is portrayed, it's probably the best one. But is it the best golf movie? Jack in Quincy, what is the best golf movie?
Bubby Jones, genius.
Okay, now I've seen this one, like coming around again on my cable channels, but I've never watched it. Who plays Bobby Jones? Do you know?
I can't remember his name. No,
I know who it is. Go ahead.
I think it's a great portrayal of golf and the story of golf and the history of golf. But on another note, on that Tin Cup one, so
yes.
I actually played at the course. It's in Houston. I played at that course in a tournament, a charity gig. And we talked the general manager into letting us go downstairs into the ballroom they have down there, because out in the pond they actually have a wooden pelican sitting on top of a stick. and we talked him into letting us go down there and trying to bang a few balls at it. Anyway, long and short of the story is we broke three windows.
Okay. All right, I like it. Very good. Thanks for that. Jim Caviezel plays Bobby Jones in that movie, which Jim Caviezel is a great example of an actor where you immediately recognize him, and then, well, have you really ever seen him in a movie? Yeah, you have. Let's see. He was in Wyatt Earp. He was in The Rock. Thin Red Line, Passion of the Christ. That's his biggest. Outside of that, I don't know if you've seen a lot of movies with Jim Caviezel. I can't tell you my favorite Jim Caviezel movie, but he plays Bobby Jones in that one. All right. Here's what, Alex, you and I are about to get into it here. Alex, best golf movie ever, in your opinion, is what?
Hey, Hardy, thanks for letting me on. First time, long time. It's not even a question. 100% Legend of Bagger Vance.
Oh,
you got an all-time crew, Matt Damon, Will Smith, Charlize Theron, love interest. It's a wonderful story about a guy that used to be great. He comes back to the game, learning how to swing again, and there's just a ton of uplifting moments. What do you think, Hardy?
What do you think of Matt Damon's swing in that movie? Alex! Yeah, that's what I thought. Come on, man. Especially since they got a couple of golfers to play Bobby Jones and Walter Hagen, who can actually, I don't know if they can hit a golf ball, but they can swing the club to make it look like they can hit a golf ball. You're telling me that Matt Damon, that swing, is the best player in all of Georgia? Oh, man. It's bad. And let me tell you something else. The book is, flaky is probably the wrong word. It's ethereal, okay? It gets into all these, you know, very Zen-like and meta concepts and all this stuff, and it's fantastical at times. I mean, and I read the book before the movie came out, and remember, it gets into, you know, this really wild stuff where, you know, Juna is seeing the field and he's transported back and, you know, to the war, World War One, I guess, is, you know, Ranoff Juna is a veteran of World War One, and he comes back to Savannah, and, you know, there are all these, like, you know, crazy things happening in the book, which they portray a little bit in the movie. But here's the biggest thing they get wrong in the movie. Will Smith's character, he plays Bagger Vance. He is supposed to be this, you know, this sage, this muse, this really otherworldly mystical presence. And in the book, they go to great lengths to describe him as a man who doesn't seem like an ordinary black man in the South in that time. Right. He doesn't speak with any kind of a Southern accent. He seems, you know, very much removed from, you know, the societal norms that he would normally be placed into. In The Legend of Bagger Vance, Will Smith decides to do this really hammy portrayal of Bagger Vance. I'm like, this isn't right. This doesn't make any sense. I will give it huge points, though, for the including of Charlize Theron, though. I mean, for that alone, I will say bravo. And I also have to give it points because the four caddy, the little assistant kid there who is in the movie, you know, kind of trails along after Bagger Vance and Juna. You know what his character's name is? Hardy. Kid couldn't act his way out of a paper bag, but, you know, the character's name, Hardy. I mean, you got to give points for that. All right, one more call here on the best golf movie ever. We'll go to Paul in Charlestown. Go ahead, Paul. What do you think it is?
The greatest game ever played.
The greatest game ever played, Paul, is maybe the greatest golf story of all time. I mean, it is, I've always said it is the greatest sports upset ever, more so than the U.S. Olympic hockey team beating the Russians in 1980. The fact that Francis Wiemek, the kid who grew up, you can still drive past his old house, you know. It's right there. It's across from the country club there in Brookline. It's right there. The fact that he goes over there and beats Harry Vardon, beats the world over. It's a great story, but the movie? Really?
Well, I'm probably going with the story, but Hardy, I can't. Club. I'm actually calling from Hilton Head, and I caddy at Harbortown.
Oh, very nice. So, are you an actual caddy, or are you a
caddy in career?
Are you a resort caddy there in Harbortown? Like, you just trot along with the carts, or are you actually out there carrying clubs?
Well, due to the pandemic, I'm actually from Charlestown, but due to the pandemic, we can't carry any bags. We've been shut down, and actually the Heritage, which usually goes off in April, is in 2 weeks without fans.
Aha. Okay. Well,
and which is Rory McIlroy is actually coming to play Harbortown, which he's never done.
Well, we were just talking about that, and thanks for the call, Paul. We were just talking about the fact that a lot of these golfers are loading up their schedule and playing a bunch of tournaments that they would never ordinarily play, and you just gave us a great example. Rory McIlroy going to play. He's playing three out of the first four events, including the Charles Schwab starting on Thursday in Fort Worth, because these guys want to get out there and play, and they want to get their games in shape before they have to start playing in, you know, in major championships that have been delayed this season. The story, yes. The story of the greatest game ever played is the best story. Is it the best movie? No. Especially, they took a lot of creative license with how that match ended. You know, from reading the Mark Frost book, you'll learn that, like, that match was well in hand. It didn't come down to the last hole. Francis Wiemet had that thing won. All right. Step aside here. If you are looking to get your game back in shape, if you need to get your swing loosened up, you need to warm up before a round. You need to keep your swing in shape. This is not a paid promotion. This is nothing. This is just a conversation I had with a guy years ago. I went back and found it because I think a lot of people could probably use this particular training aid these days. What is it? It's the only thing I use on a regular basis, and it is my favorite all-time golf tool to help with your swing and to help with your strength, to help with your pliability, everything. It does everything. What is it? Well, you'll find out when I replay the conversation I had with the gentleman behind this product next on the Sports Hub Golf Club.
Constantly hitting it from the rough. This is the show for you. The Sports Hub Golf Club with Hardy on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Well, we're always trying to get better at this game. You can never master golf, but there's a lot of things out there that look pretty weird and you don't know if they work. I got to tell you, Jim, this one looks weird, but I've seen it a lot, so you must be doing something right. Jim Hackenberg, the man behind Orange Whip. First of all, Jim, describe what this is, and I'm sure people are going to know what you're talking about as soon as you describe what the Orange Whip is.
Well, I certainly hope so. What we have is basically a balance and tempo trainer. By swinging the Orange Whip back and forth, because of its unique design, you're going to improve your balance, you're going to improve your rhythm, but because of the way it's weighted, let's say, it's going to stretch you out, it's going to provide a great core muscle workout, but it's also going to give a person the feeling of what Ernie Els looks like. And that's a hard thing to accomplish.
And for those of you who haven't seen it, it looks like a standard golf club, but where the head would be, there is an orange-sized orange ball at the end of it. So tell me, what are the dimensions of this club? Are there different sizes? And when are you supposed to use this thing?
Well, ideally using it before you go out for a practice session or before you go play. This is a great device to use in the winter to keep your swing in shape, so when spring rolls around, you're ready to go. But you're right, we have a weighted orange ball that's about 10 or 11 ounces, so it's quite a bit heavier than a normal golf club. The shaft is very flexible, much more flexible than you would find in a golf club, and it's counterbalanced with a steel ball, which is 8 ounces, but when you factor in the weight of the grip, it's about 10, 11 ounces, so therefore it's equally balanced. So when you're swinging it, it's going to keep your swing balanced because of that balancing act.
Now, I remember years ago when my dad was first telling me he used to have a donut that he would slide onto the, you know, the hosel of the golf club.
Sure.
And I still see people using them, but I got to imagine you decided that wasn't good enough and you improved on that notion?
Absolutely. It's really the key is, because it is a heavier head to it than you find on a golf club, so it's like the donut, but the flexible shaft is the key element. That's what ties it together. The only way an individual can swing this device and not make it feel awkward or actually even pull them off balance is to swing in perfect rhythm. And if every one of us had better rhythm, we'd all be better players. So my objective with the flexible shaft was the rhythm. The counterbalance was what helps keep it on the proper swing plane. But the shaft is really the key element.
Okay, so where did you come up with this idea? Where did you develop it? How long have you been trying to push these orange whips on golfers who are looking for anything to get them better?
Sure. I'm a PGA golf professional, and I'd focused my career on teaching. And I would spend my summers here in New England at Martha's Vineyard teaching at a golf club there in the summers from 01 through 07. But in the winter, I'd go to California and teach at a club there in the wintertime. Well, in that run, I took a few years off from California, and I caddied on the PGA Tour. While caddying on the PGA Tour, I was able to watch the best players in the world, the guys with the best rhythm, the best balance. By studying their swings, and what I started to see was, it didn't appear like they were swinging a golf club anymore. It appeared that they were swinging a ball on the end of a chain. And that's the only way you can get your arms and body and footwork all to synchronize. So I set out in a small shed on Martha's Vineyard to develop a device that could get this message across. I started using fishing rods, fishing weights, and different. I used to use a doorknob with lead in it as my counterweight. All these different renditions I made in a small shed, and I started using them in my lessons. And people would say after the lesson, they go, "Hey, Jimmy, can I buy this thing from you?" And that's when the light bulb went off. It's like, hey, I'm going to start a business. I left the teaching in 07. I started the business that fall and brought out the product January of 08. And we've done great. We've grown tremendously since January of 2008.
And I've seen the products in stores, I'm pretty sure. You know, sure. I imagine there have been some copycats, but this is it, the orange whip. Now, who did you loop for out on the PGA Tour?
His name was Patrick Moore. He was a good friend of mine growing up. We competed against each other as high school kids and then in college. And then we pursued playing the tour. He ended up making it. I went to teaching. And he invited me to come out there after he was the leading money winner on the Web.com tour in 2002. And I joined up with him in 2003.
Do you have any players on tour right now or guys who are utilizing this who are playing at a high level?
We have many. Last year, 47 of the top 125 money winners use an orange whip that we know of. There may be more. But from the New England area, we've got Peter Uihlein, we've got Brad Adamonis, we've got Brad Faxon, we've got James Driscoll. We've got a lot of guys who use it.
Say that again. How many out of the top money winners are using this?
47 of the top 125 of last year.
That's amazing.
And if you take the Champions Tour, the LPGA, and the PGA Tour, and the Web.com, I believe we have about 280 people using it.
That's fantastic.
We don't pay them to use it. They choose to use this product. And many of them, Greg Norman, for example, paid for it. He didn't.
I was going to say, do you make him pay for it?
I used to. When I started the business, I was very frugal and I needed to save cash. So I used to charge the tour players. Now we're more apt to give it to them because when you see it in Graham McDowell's bag on tour, when you see it in Podrick's bag, it helps us a lot.
I wish you the best of luck. And I tell you, anything, like you said at the beginning, that can help you stretch out, build the core strength, to me, the improved timing and balance, that's almost icing on the cake to the initial benefit of just stretching out and getting warmed up before a round.
Absolutely correct. My intention with building it was to help the poorer golfers or the beginning or the higher handicap golfers, but I quickly learned that the teaching professionals and the tour professionals and the better players are the first ones to gravitate toward it. So that was great because the better players, if they like something, the people who are trying to improve will always look up to the better players. So it's worked out well. I designed it for the poor golfers, but the better ones immediately understand it.
Okay, so people who want to find this for themselves, where do they go? What do you recommend for seeing everything? I imagine you have a website.
Absolutely. They can go to orangewhiptrainer.com, but also go to your local, a lot of the golf stores, the Golfsmith. There's a few other golf retail shops in the area as well. They could check out at our website. They could punch in their local area, and there'll be numbers of them that show up.
And how many people do the Blues Brother joke with you for the orange whip? Orange whip? Orange whip?
That's the name came from that.
Come on.
No, that's the truth. Yeah, because that was my favorite. I loved that scene from the movie.
Yeah.
And I knew it was going to be a ball on the end of a flexible shaft, and I liked the color orange. So when I saw that scene, I said, you know what, that's it, that's the name.
Was Orange Whip a trademark name by some beverage company that you had to appropriate?
It is a trademark name, but if it's a different product, you can do it. Because that's a drink, mine's a swing training product, and if somebody has a shoe, let's say, they could call it Orange Whip as well. So it depends on the product.
I'm going to start a company and build golf tees and call them Coca-Cola. I mean, I'm going to save myself a lot of money in R&D, and I'm going to use an even bigger beverage name.
Well, they may be able to. They may have more lawyers than I do, but
or that the Orange Whip Beverage Company has.
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct.
Well, Jim, thanks so much for the time. OrangeWhipTrainer.com.
Yep.
You mentioned Golfsmith. That's where I've seen them before. You can find them all over the place. And next time you're at a PGA Tour event, check out the practice range, which is a great place to go anyway. And you'll see them in the bags of some of these top money winners. You're really onto something, Jim. So thanks for the time.
Thank you, Hardy. I enjoy it. It's been going great.
If you want to play below par, keep listening. This is the Sports Hub Golf Club on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Back now on the Sports Hub Golf Club. I want to thank Jim Hackenberg, who I spoke with years ago. You can tell that conversation was a little dated just from a couple of the references there. But the Orange Whip training aid, that's the one that I have, I use. Tucker and I were talking during the segment there. He said, do you really use that thing? I said, yeah. And it's something that you're supposed to just carry in your bag, right? And then when you get to the golf course, since I probably end up walking and carrying my clubs, I'd say, at least half the time that I play, I don't keep it in my bag all the time because it is heavy. And I'm not going to – I've taken it out with me and forgot to, you know, leave it in the parking lot before I go. And I'd rather not have that thing and lug it around the entire golf course. But it is best just to keep in your bag and to use it as a warm-up tool. Before the first tee, but I use it at home just to swing. I mean, I can go out in the yard and swing a club and hit some balls around, but I feel like more often than not, I'm going to be practicing mistakes if I do that. And, you know, you think you figure something out. I've been doing it my whole life, right? I figure out the game of golf. I'm like, you know what the secret to chipping is? I just discovered this on my own. It's really, you got to use your right hand. You got to use the trailing hand and get in there and get really handsy with it. Or, yeah, you know what the thing is? Don't play it off the back foot. Go ahead and, you know, play those pitch shots way off the, like all this crazy cockamamie stuff that you think you figure out when really, if you want to help your game, take something like the Orange Whip. That's weighted, and it's going to help with your balance. It's going to help with your core strength, and it's going to help you with your rotation because this thing is really hard to swing just with your hands. You need to do like a body turn in order to do it more than a few times. And it, I just find it to be one of the more helpful and more versatile things that you can have. And I have never received a dime from Orange Whip. And like I said, that conversation was from years ago. But now Orange Whip is really blown up, and you'll see not only Orange Whips, but you'll see other things like the Orange Whip Peel, which I think they have out at Core Golf. They use these things. This is something that goes on the ground, and it's like a concave platform that helps get you into the right stance, but it also promotes a rotational golf swing as opposed to swaying. It stops you from swaying. Plus, because it's concave, you can reposition your feet to practice downhill lies and uphill lies. So the Orange Whip people have come up with a bunch of stuff. I see now, and I just checked it out during that segment there, that they've got, and I may have seen one of these like over at Golfer's Warehouse before, something called the Stan Utley Wedge. And Stan Utley is a putting guru, and I think he's been on the show before years ago after he wrote a book. He originally wrote about, the first thing I read from Stan Utley was kind of like an arc shaped putting stroke, right? Instead of straight back and straight through, he said, no, you got to use a more natural putting stroke that kind of goes on an arc, which most people do anyway. You think you're going straight back and straight through, which you can for short putts. But anytime you get a putt of any length, your putting motion is going to be slightly arced anyway. Anyway, that's what Stan Utley first, I first came to know him as, was a putting guru, but he's also obviously got some short game tips as well. So he developed this Orange Whip wedge that they have now. So all kinds of different stuff that they've got up there now. So anyway, that would be my that is my advice. If anybody's ever asking me for something, Fred Tutcher, once a year when he's looking for a gift for his dad, he's like, Hardy, what should I get my dad? And I had him a couple of years ago. I said, get him an Orange Whip, and Fred said that's the best gift he's ever given his father is that his dad loves that orange. Matter of fact, Father's Day coming up. There you go. Unintended benefit from that segment this morning. You need to find something for your dad to play his golf. If he doesn't have an orange whip, that's a great gift idea. There you go. Done and done. I mentioned that some of the references there were kind of outdated in my conversation with Jim Hackenberg because of, you know, it was done a few years ago. One of the things he mentioned was the web.com tour, which is, I believe, entirely replaced now by the Corn Ferry tour. There was a story about a month ago that I never touched on, and I'm going to tell you why. And now it's been resolved. But it involved the Corn Ferry Tour and Vijay Singh. Vijay Singh was going to participate in a Corn Ferry event, which is the mini tour, right? It's been called various things over the years, the Nike Tour, the Web.com Tour. So Vijay was all set to play. He was going to go into this Corn Ferry event. Number one, because he's got an exemption. He has won enough on tour, and he can pretty much go play in any Corn Ferry event he wants. And apparently Vijay felt he needed to now because he's trying to get himself, you know, back into the rankings and back into being a regular tour player. He's also on the Champions Tour. You know, Vijay is one of these guys who's been around long enough to where he can do about whatever he wants. But this drew criticism from all over the place and some support from, I would say, some unlikely places. So the event he was going to play in, the Corn Ferry Challenge at Dyes Valley at TPC Sawgrass, it had a $600,000 purse, and this is a big money opportunity for guys trying to make it onto the PGA Tour, for developmental tour players, right? These guys are struggling financially to begin with, and much more so because of the coronavirus shutdown. So here comes Vijay Singh, who is, get ready for this, the fourth all-time PGA Tour money winner. Yeah. Some usual suspects at 1, 2, and 3. Vijay Singh, fourth all-time on the PGA Tour money list, comes along and says, I want to play in this event. Vijay's made like $70 million playing golf. And you know these guys. We talked about this last week on the show, like on the Forbes list of athletes. Tiger Woods is one of the top 10 paid athletes in the world because of the money he made last year. Virtually all of it from endorsements. You know, golfers don't make a ton of money playing golf. And Vijay has still managed to make like $70 million just in purse money. So he comes along, he's like, yeah, I want to play in this. I need it for the points. I needed to get back. Brady Schnell, who is like a, you know, 30-something-year-old journeyman, Corn Ferry Tour veteran, he put out a series of tweets saying, okay, he didn't mince his words. Hey, at Vijay Singh Golf, you are a true piece of trash if you expect money playing in a Corn Ferry Tour event, and I'll say it right to your face. Do you know how much those points and money could do for a young kid? He's a complete turd for playing. Somebody else responded to him, say, you know, this really shouldn't be an issue, but I don't know. Maybe you cut him some slack. Brady Schnell said, it's just Vijay being Vijay, selfish. Oh. Someone else responded to this Brady Schnell guy. He said, oh, it's one spot. He's done a lot for the game. Brady Schnell said, one spot? Do you know how much those points and money could do for a young kid? He's a complete turd for playing. He got his money and he's got his career. Just wait another month and roll in with your senior friends. Well, Schnell did apologize for his barrage against Vijay Singh. And Vijay decided to withdraw from the event. Phil Mickelson was one of the guys who came to his defense. He said, you know what? The money that Vijay made for golf and the money that he made, a lot of this supports the Corn Ferry and other developmental tours along the years. So, you know, Vijay has already given a lot back to the game. And if he wants to go play in this thing, he's earned his right. He's earned his right by going out there and playing. He can go play wherever he wants. You know, think of it like Michael Jordan going and showing up at a pickup basketball game. It's like, I can play here. You know what I've meant to this game? I can play wherever I want. He's decided to drop out. He did get a lot of criticism, and I think what finally resonated with him was the fact that it was young players that could end up being impacted and hurt by this. But Vijay Singh is one of the most polarizing figures out there in the last 20 years on tour, just because he's had issues with other players. He can't appear prickly. And then at other times, Vijay has been known as the guy who would stop at anybody's station on the range if somebody said hello to him or asked him a question. And he, you know, talking about the orange whip, I've seen Vijay. I saw Vijay years ago at the Deutsche Bank Championship. He had all the training aids and all the tools and all this stuff. I don't know that anybody ever worked harder on his game. You know, thousands of balls before events, after events, off seasons. He was always out there practicing. And by many people's estimation, always willing to help a guy who was struggling. He rubbed some people the wrong way, and other guys he was, you know, not a savior, but he was always someone who was willing to help. So, I don't know, Phil Mickelson, another one of those polarizing guys who came to VJ's defense in this, and now it's all for naught because he's decided to withdraw anyway. All right, well, step aside. We still have some golf stories to get to here this morning as we get into what has become known as the Sports Hub Golf Club wrap-up show. Hey, it's Hardy and Mimosas. That'll be coming up next. 90 seconds, no commercials, just the headlines, and then we'll continue here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.